All right. Hey, everybody. I don't know why I can't get it in my mind that today is Tuesday. Obviously I do know it is because I showed up, but it even feels odd being here. It feels like we're all here on the wrong day. I don't know where this is coming from, but it must be Tuesday. We're all here. So welcome to Gentle Healing Year 3. April Fool's hangover, Susan says. Yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know if y'all just overheard that the Gentle Healing Year 1 folks are going to a 2-hour class like we used to have. Right now they only have 90 minutes. So what's going to start happening on April 23rd, which is still a few weeks away, is that the sanctuary schedule is going to change. Dawn is going to open the sanctuary half an hour earlier. So that the Gentle Healing Year 1 folks can have 2 full hours. Our schedule doesn't change. We're still from 8:30 to 9:30 Eastern time. The difference is because we opened the sanctuary half an hour earlier, we're also going to close half an hour earlier. So the sanctuary will close right after Gentle Healing 3. Shauna's program will no longer follow us. Her program is going to move to Sunday nights. Starting at the end of April. So a little bit of change going on, and we're doing all of this because, again, the Gentle Healing Year 1 people just wanted to have a 2-hour class like we did. They felt like they were rushing. So, but there's no real change for us unless, of course, you like to watch Shauna. Then she'll be on Sunday nights right after me with the Guiding Light. I'll be doing the Guiding Light for only half an hour from 7 to 7:30. And then Shauna will come on from 7:30 to 8 Eastern. So, yeah. All right. Well, I have, as usual, collected stuff during the week that I have to share on. But I would like to give you all the opportunity first if there's something you want to share on or ask. So does anybody have anything? I'm not seeing anything. All right, then. Still not. Oh, Jay. Okay. Jay, go ahead.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Just noticing a greater peace overall because of the increased practice and the regularity and consistency of the practice. This morning, I slept in and I didn't meditate. And I did notice a difference in my thinking today, a big difference. So it is really no lie that you really need to do this every day in the morning when you first get up until you're, I guess, awakened. Or, well, we've been talking about practice no matter what, constantly. So it's interesting because, you know, the rewards of that are so, I get just a lot of inspiration, just express gratitude for the people that are writing every day. I just think it's awesome to read it. So that's it. You know, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, Michael Langford makes the recommendation that you meditate every day for as long as the body lives, you know, until the body dies. Let's see. I want to read one of these quotes to you. Oh, listen to this one from Sri Annamalai Swami. This is quote number 921 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. You have to make an enormous effort to realize the self. It is very easy to stop on the way and fall back into ignorance. At any moment, you can fall back. You have to make a strong, determined effort to remain on the peak when you first reach it. But eventually, a time will come when you are fully established in the self. When that happens, you cannot fall. But I think we would probably all admit that hasn't happened for us yet. So, so we're still in the phase where we need to make that strong, determined effort, right? And for me, and I think this is probably true for many of you all as well. For me, the problem with skipping a day of meditation is it it makes it easier to skip the next day. That's the real problem. So on days when it seems like I can't meditate because of whatever, usually it's because I'm on family vacation, I still try to get in like about just 30 minutes. My family has finally gotten used to the fact, okay, you guys, I'm going to meditate for 30 minutes, you know, and I sit there and it may not even be 100% the same quality because they're moving around in the room and stuff, but it just keeps the habit up, right? The habit is very important. So, yeah. Does anyone else have anything to share? Jay says he plans on meditating today still. So he, before the day is out, he will not have skipped it. Yeah. All right, then. Let me go to my collection from the week. The first thing I have is quote number 172. Oh, by the way, let me say one more thing to you before I forget, kind of in the way of introduction, because once we jump into the inspired stuff, I'll forget the other stuff. This coming week, near the end of the week, so it'll be actually next Monday, April 8th, you guys are going to begin the step one review. So you will finish the step one quotes on Sunday, and then on Monday you will begin the step one review. And the main reason I'm saying that is in case there are some of you who do not watch the daily contemplation yet, you'll definitely want to pay attention to that daily contemplation post that comes out because it will tell you which quotes to contemplate for the review. And again, you'll have a 12-day review. In this review, all of the quotes that I selected for one of two reasons. It could be either of the reasons, or I guess it could be both. But one reason was I thought it was an excellent quote for us just to review and have in our mind again before we move on. So it was something that maybe we read, but then we might have just kind of forgot about. So I just wanted to put it in front of our faces again. The other reason that I may have selected a quote is because there might be something deeper in it. And so looking at it again, you might see more than you did the first time. So again, 12 days of review starting April 8th, next Monday. Yes, Jay?
I've stopped writing out my contemplations and I just type them right into the computer. Does anyone else do that? Or is that something you just, George says he does that, Kathy, Shauna. Wow, a lot of people. Okay, so I'm probably one of the few that was doing that. Do you, Regina, write it out into the computer directly?
I do. I type directly into the computer now. For years, I did it in a notebook and transferred it. But now I go directly to the computer.
Oh, Lynn says she still writes it in a notebook. Okay, thanks. Yeah.
All right, so quote number 172 then. It says, give up all your doubts. Resort to moral courage. And I saw a few people contemplate what moral courage is, but I just thought we would pause here and see together what we think that means in relation to the first sentence, give up all your doubts, resort to moral courage. So anyone who wants to share about what moral courage is in relation to this quote, please let me know. Jay, go ahead.
To me, moral courage is continuing on the path and continuing to look, specifically with the doubts only come up if you don't really have commitment towards something. You know, a kid doesn't have doubts that he's going to open his Christmas presents the next day. You know, I have no doubt in my practices when I really want them. And then, the courage for me is also when facing really difficult things in yourself. Like if the feeling you're an utter fraud comes up, say for instance,
for example, just out of the blue,
you know, doesn't relate to me at all. Anyway. I had a very powerful, I am a fraud feeling come up and it couldn't really even tie it to one specific thing. Just it was, I told Regina it was 40% fraud, 60% real. or what I felt grounded. You know, you ever have an experience where it's unsettling to you, where your frame of reference gets jarred and you just don't feel normal? Like that's what I was experiencing. Something was pulled out. I made to look at, and it was just jarring a little bit. I still felt kind of in control. Regina said, even if you feel 1%, hold on to that 1%. Thank goodness it wasn't 1% 99, but to me, that's moral courage. I had to just be with it, and, you know, I don't really know what it is. I try to be very honest with everything I do. I don't know why a feeling that I'm a better fraud came up. It was pretty intense. So I guess to me, in my own experience, the moral fraud, the moral courage, not moral fraud, moral courage, you know, these things that come up as you're peeling the layers off, you got to look at it. You got to go through them. You can't try to suppress it down. Well, I shouldn't have any doubts. Why am I feeling like a fraud? I didn't do all that. I just sat with it in the uncomfortableness of it until it took like 2-3 days to fade. But it was, and I asked Regina about it. She didn't say, you know, exactly what it was. It's just that I have to sit with it. I asked her also, is it important I figure out why I'm feeling this? And she said, no, it isn't important. You know, that's my experience with the courage this week. So giving up the mic.
Thank you. I'm going to share my screen for a moment. What I have here is the definition of moral. And you'll notice it has several definitions, but they're all very, very related, of or relating to principles of right and wrong in behavior. Expressing or teaching a conception of right behavior, conforming to a standard of right behavior, sanctioned by or operative on one's conscience or ethical judgment, capable of right and wrong action. And then there's this other definition, probable, though not proved. Now that's kind of interesting if you look at the quote here. Because it says, give up all your doubts. Resort to moral courage. And one definition of moral is probable, though not proved. So how many of you know for certain that the truth that the sages are teaching us is true? Yeah, I don't. I don't know that for certain. So I think what this particular quote means is it's kind of like, you know, when I was a Christian, I think, you know, probably around the Baptist faith, they would talk a lot about faith. You had to have faith in God, even though you couldn't see him, right, is the way they would say it. I think this is really talking about the same kind of thing. Most of us, if not all of us, do not know for a fact, you know, from direct experience, that these teachings are true. And I will tell you from my own experience that when you're going through this particular spiritual path, you will come up against some really strong fears that seem, from the world perspective, to be very, very real. Like for me, I face the fear of running out of money, which is a big deal when you're a single mom raising a daughter. At least it seems that way. It seems like a pretty big deal, right? So the moral courage is trusting that the truth is true more than trusting that the world is true. So, for example, and I'm not telling anybody to quit their job. I never would. But that was my particular guidance, right? So in my case, that was definitely guidance. And so I quit my job, and I was writing NTI, but I was earning zero money. There was no donations at that time or anything. I was earning zero money. And just every time I paid bills, the savings was going down, 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 down. And that's when all of this fear really arose. And it wasn't just me that was afraid, which was quite interesting, because I've ever since I started this path, pretty much I've been public. You know, I've been, I've had a blog, I've been teaching, first it was in Pal Talk, you know, so people have been watching me every step of the way. And when all this fear started coming up, I was very honest about the fear that was coming up. However, I was talking about it in an awareness, a watching kind of way. But my audience, the people who were listening, became afraid for me. And I started getting emails from people telling me to go get a job and, you know, and all this stuff. And when I started getting all these emails from people, my fear escalated. And you know, I do know, I mean, anybody who knows me knows I'm not afraid to work. And to say that Regina's afraid to work is, you know, just insanity. Regina works her little butt off, her big butt off. No, actually, I haven't worked the butt off, but that's all right. I'll keep working. We'll see if that happens someday. But, you know, so it's not that I'm afraid of work, and I know how to go out and I know how to get a job. It just wasn't my guidance. And I knew that for a fact, right? So it took moral courage for me to choose not to go out and do what I knew how to do, not to fall back on Regina taking care of herself and going out and getting a job. You know, and that by moral courage, what I mean is I was trusting that the truth was true, that my guidance was genuine, and that I would. At that point, I wanted to find out that the world was not real. That's what my spiritual aspiration was at that time, to learn for myself directly that the world was not real. And I would learn that if I stuck to my guidance and did not go get a job, just kept doing what it asked me to do. That's moral courage, right? So I just wanted to go back and kind of touch on that point, because I did see several people contemplate it, but I'm not sure I saw anyone really get to that point. It takes a lot of bravery to follow this path all the way to the end, because your conditioning will be tested, right? And you're either going to fall back on your conditioning, like going and getting a job would have been falling back on my conditioning. You're either going to fall back on your conditioning or not. And to not fall back on your conditioning is moral courage. To not take control the way you've always taken control and feel safe the way you've always felt safe. Are there any questions or comments on that?
You spoke of like a financial aspect. I guess that's where a lot of us, you know, get scared. If we don't have any money, you know, we won't be able to live. Do you see that as the sort of biggest fear point with this in general?
No, that's true for some people. For some people, their biggest fear is health. Some people actually, I know a few people of this personality type, imagine or at least exaggerate, not knowing they're exaggerating, their own health situation, and are constantly running to doctors. In that case, to not go to the doctor, especially when your family is advising you, saying you really don't need to go to the doctor, to not go to the doctor when it's your habit to constantly run to the doctor, takes the same moral courage.
Okay. Go ahead.
For some people, it's relationships. I've known people that are addicted to relationships, and as soon as one relationship ends, they go looking for another relationship. And to not go look for that relationship when that's always been your habit, that's always been your conditioning, that's what you've always done to feel safe, to feel worthy, to feel loved, takes the same moral courage. So, you know, different personalities, I would say, have different primary obstacles. You know, Peace Pilgrim said, the ego knows the weakest spot in your armor. And I think we can all trust that that's true. So whatever our thing is, whether it's money or health or relationships or something else that I didn't think of just now, at some point it will come up and we're going to be tempted, sorely tempted, to run back to what we've always done. And but there'll be clear guidance not to. And you have to be able to have that moral courage and not return to your conditioning. If you don't, you'll never break free. That answer your question? Yeah, go ahead, someone.
Yeah, this is Abigail.
Hi, Abigail.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to share because money's not mine and health is not mine. I mean, I'm just really so, I just kind of roll with it. Whatever happens, I just accept it. But I'll tell you what mine is. And I'll tell you that on that quote, at that one day of contemplation, it didn't get it. It took a week and it was a process. And look, my voice is kind of shaking because it's like I can feel it coming up. Like it was so frightening because I've been rolling along and you don't really have the thought, I've got this, because you certainly know that you don't have it, but there's still a ease and a peace in it. And so what I realized is that false self is so darn tricky. That coyote is just there waiting for the moment to spring. And so what I realized was that there were two, really. One is the need to know. That as a child, I protected myself by reading books and knowing more, and then going to school and getting more education. And I've always just gathered knowledge and gathered education. And so to hear all this, that not knowing is like the end product, is just like terrifying to me. Like, how will I live if I'm not the smartest person in the room, or if I don't, not that I am, but that I always have enough bullshit around me that I can put on this big persona that, you know, that I can hide behind this mask. So this mask got broken, that I had this need to know, and the way that it got, and so what that translates to is a fear of ignorance. And then deeper than that, going down deeper and going into more inquiry, because I just got to keep looking. I got to keep looking. It's like Muji says, like, don't look away, just keep looking. And so when I looked, what brought it up was the need for approval, and a friend rejected me. Mm-hmm. And that's what opened me up, was when that friend rejected me, and I realized how deep that need for approval, that it still hangs on by a thread, but it's still there. And that the ego that I thought was like, had kind of like, I had put to bed, I had done enough purification. And I had to face that purification can still happen in a really big way, and that not only do I have to pay attention to the practice of meditation, but I have to really pay attention to believing attention. I've got to watch everything that I cast my believing attention to. And, you know, I just threw everything in on that friend who was pissed off at me and just decided that she didn't like me, that she didn't like what I believe, what I said, or, you know, whatever it was. But it took, and when I finally got to the end of that, like at the end of the week, you know, what I wrote was, it takes a lot of courage to live a good life.
Yeah. Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you. Does anyone else want to share on this particular?
Yeah, that was Malcolm. I wanted to share that, you know, Malcolm. It's funny, on the money thing is, I've had money and not had money. And now I have a trust fund. So it's, you know, it's there, but the mind hasn't changed. I mean, the mind, you know, gives a little relief, but then it still keeps on. It's still, you know, those thoughts, those worries are still there. And I guess, like, for me, you know, it was money. And then when I got on the spiritual path, it was like, you know, not awakening or not recognizing the truth. And for me, it's like, I can't really, if I go for the specific things to try to work on, it's still the doer is still there. And all these things is just, are just, they're, to me, I'm just seeing that it's just there to keep me separate. It's just there to keep that doer alive. And, but when I just check, is the doer there? Can I really find that self? And it not being there, that seems to be the most effective for everything for me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And one thing I want to say, since Malcolm mentioned the doer, is, and I guess I have to express this as an opinion. It is my opinion that we all should follow guidance. For example, I mentioned when I started this, you know, I wouldn't just run out and quit your job. You know, like if somebody says, oh, I have a fear of money, I need to let go of that too. I'm going to go quit my job. You know, when it's coming from your head, you're probably just going to create more trouble for yourself. It's a matter of following guidance. You know, one way, for example, that guidance helps people get over the fear of money sometimes is just by giving more than they typically would. You know, like maybe there's something and you're tempted to give $25. And just as you start to reach for the $25, you hear 200. Like, ah, oh, geez, you know, 200, go ahead and write the check for 200. You know, follow that guidance. That guidance knows how to lead you. So just tune into guidance, be aware of guidance, and follow guidance. And if you follow guidance, that is practicing moral courage. Okay. Anything else? All right, then let me go on to the next thing that I collected for us this week. And that is, I want to share with you, first let's look at quote 176, and then I'm going to share with you Manuela's post. Quote 176 says, as and when the perception of an object arises within you, meet it with the understanding, I am not this. Such ignorant perception will immediately cease. In fact, there is nothing to be known in all this. There is need only to get rid of confusion or deluded understanding. If this delusion is not repeatedly revived, it ceases to be. Whatever notion arises in you, even as movement arises in wind, realize that I am not this, and thus deprive it of support. All right, let's go. Let me share my screen first so you guys can be entertained while I go look for it. So let's go to Awakening Together. It's a little harder with the Zoom. All the little Zoom tools are in my way. No matter where I put you guys, you're still in my way. Let's see. Manuela, I haven't finished reading you guys today, as you can tell. Here it is, Manuela. And then we wanted her 176. Oops, I think it was right there at the top. Let me remove the filter. Here we go. So this is a little bit of a long post, but I think it's worth it. She starts off by quoting, as and when the perception of an object arises within you, meet it with the understanding, I am not this. As and when indicates that perception of objects is part of the human experience. When an object arises within you, our mind, we place attention on it. What then is attention? It is consciousness specifically directed towards an object or objective experience. Consciousness, in the absence of attention, is wide, unfocused, open field, the highest form of meditation. Attention is a doing, a movement of awareness away from itself towards an object. The source of attention is awareness, and the destination of attention is always an object. We cannot direct our attention towards its source. This just frustrates the mind. We can only attend to an object of experience, a thought, feeling, image, perception, but we can't attend to the source of attention for the same reason eyes can't see themselves. Instead, attention has to come to an end in order for consciousness to know itself. Seeing the object and meet it with understanding, I am not this. In meditation, a preliminary step is to direct attention on the breath, guru, mantra, etc., as it steadies the mind. So, to quiet the busy mind, it helps to place attention from many objects to just one object. But no matter how subtle that object is, even as movement arises in wind, our attention consciousness is again directing itself away from itself towards that object. The highest form of meditation is the relaxation or sinking of attention. It is never the directing or focusing of attention. By meeting the perceived object with the understanding, I am not this, this quiets the mind to an extent that it will be able to begin to sink backwards towards its source. This relaxing, sinking, is the exact same as the precise moment of the act of falling asleep. A few years ago, I realized that I didn't love sleeping, dream sleep, she's referring to, as much as the act of falling asleep, the total letting go of thinking in that moment. The mind loves paying attention to something. It wants something to do, something to focus on. All activity is a movement away from consciousness. In order to illuminate something other than itself, consciousness has to do something, has to direct its attention. But in order to know itself, illuminate itself, it doesn't have to do something special, as its nature is to know itself. It knows itself by being itself. Deep meditation is not something we do. It's something we are. Meditation is not an activity of the mind. It's the nature of the mind. It's the sinking back towards its source. To the mind that is accustomed to being fixed on objects, it will seem to be something we do. But in fact, we later realize it is the cessation of an activity. This activity, the delusion of confused understanding, is a habit, repeatedly reviving this delusion. And pulling the plug on habits, they eventually cease. Ignorant perception is an act of the mind thinking, a doing process for the separate self, the belief and feeling that what I am is temporary and finite. Realizing that I am not this is already a step away from the separate self. Also note that as we cease this habit of tightness in the mind, both the mind and the body relax for untension. Eventually, as and when we go back to the object of experience, they cease to have the power to conceal our knowledge of ourself from ourself. The knowledge of ourself remains in the presence of objects, and in the line between life and meditation falls away, and meditation becomes the nature of our lives. So after the firefly stage, the back and forth between objects and experience, self and meditation, nothing prevents us from being in meditation. So I just thought that was a lovely post related to that particular quote, so I wanted to share that. So thank you, Manuela, for writing that. Are there any comments or anything?
Yeah, my aspiration has a lot to do with some of the things she wrote about living meditatively, so I really appreciate her little comment towards the end there.
That was nice. Yeah, thank you. All right, then if any of y'all ever want to go back and look at that again, that was Manuela in quote number 176. That was her contemplation. So let's look at 177. Thinking, mental conditioning, and imagination are meaningless and are productive only of psychological distress. All the sorrows and misfortunes of life are rooted in and rest in sense, experience, and thinking. And so what I wanted to do here was help ourselves become unaddicted to the thinking, mental conditioning, and imagination that is actually meaningless, that maybe we haven't yet truly seen as meaningless, by taking a moment to kind of brainstorm together and look at psychological distress that we have in the past suffered, that we absolutely know was a waste of our time because things did not turn out the way that crazy mind was saying. I think it would be great if we just sit here and kind of point out all the times. Well, we don't have time to point out all the times. Point out a lot of the times when our mind had us all worked up for nothing. Because if we can sit and look at that, it may help us not to give the mind so much meaning. So does anybody have a story they want to tell but when they got all worked up and it turned out to be for nothing? Jay.
It's happened repeatedly where I thought I deleted a file that I spent hours of very complex work doing, I thought was deleted, and it wasn't. And so I spent a while getting worked up and really upset that I lost this file. It's like making poetry and then the poetry is burned up. You know, you lost something that was, you saw as very valuable and really spent energy on. And then when I saw the file, I realized that was all for nothing.
Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. Did you say have something you want to share?
Yeah, a few months ago, I had it in my head that my daughter Emily was very depressed, and it was based on a conversation I had with my son, and I was making things up in my head, and I was actually, you know, really scared and sad for her, and just went through this whole experience of feeling helpless. And I actually shared it with Jacqueline, and Jacqueline just looked at me and she goes, "You're making this all up. How do you know that this is really what's going on? You have to talk to her." And I was like, "You know, you're right." And so I did. I did call her that day, and I didn't share with her what I heard because, again, you know, that's hearsay, right? And I really took that in with the idea that I'm making this all up and I'm just going to talk directly to the horse's mouth. So it ended up being a great conversation. I could tell by her tone of voice, because I know when my daughter has been very sad and depressed, I know, I can feel it. She wasn't. So it's just, you know, it's just a perfect example of how we make things up in our head.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Susan.
Well, I don't know if I'm the only one who's ever done this, but has anyone ever diagnosed yourself with some terrible illness just because of something that happened that morning and spent hours on Google trying to figure it all out and then found out it's nothing?
Yeah, that's exactly the one I was thinking of, Susan. I think a lot of people have done that. Imagine an illness that isn't even there. Absolutely. We have other examples? go ahead, Balcon. You go ahead.
I mean, it's just a regular, it's almost daily for me, this when I'm going to be late, or, you know, it's this whole story, I'm going to be late and something like tragic is going to happen if I'm late. You know, I'm going to miss something or look bad or just something, you know. But I just thought, just like every time that I am going somewhere and there's a possibility of that, that story starts.
Yeah.
It's kind of like my friend.
Yeah, I remember when I bought a house back in Massachusetts in, I guess it was 2001. It was right after 9/11 happened, and it was right after some anthrax scare, and people were like going to the store and buying plastic tape and duct taping on their windows because they were afraid of anthrax everywhere. And I bought a house. I think I bought a house on like September 14th, and you know, September 11 had just happened. All this was going on, and I remember when I was signing that paperwork, I was sick to my stomach. I wanted to throw up. I just knew the whole world was going, you know, to hell. And I was going to lose all this money. This house was a $400,000 house, which for me was a lot of money, but it's in Boston. I mean, you got to do what you got to do, right? But a lot of money. And I was scared to death. 3 years later, I sold that house for $500,000. I made $100,000 on that. I mean, it was just total wasted energy, right? And then I went to North Carolina and paid cash for my next house. I've never had a mortgage since then. You know, the mind doesn't know anything, does it? So, you know, I just wanted to stop and kind of look at this a little bit, because I don't think that's really sunk in. I think a lot of people, as soon as their mind starts, they're right there paying attention again. You know, thinking, mental conditioning, and imagination are meaningless, this says. Meaningless.
Regina.
Yes.
His hand is out.
Oh, go ahead, Nancy. Is that who you said? Oh, Nancy, you're muted.
I unmute myself.
Good.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. I just am kind of embarrassed about this, but I should just say it. Yes, I had an incident this weekend where my mind just went off, and it wasn't what I thought it was. But what I did was, Nancy, you're doing it again. You've done this, you know, before, but, and you're doing it again, as opposed to look at what the mind does. So I just wanted to say that, because when you started off, when you asked the question and put the question to the group, you know, does anybody have any stories, you know, that would have to do with what the mind does? I thought, no, it was what Nancy does.
Yeah.
I, you know, I thought I was a little further along, but I guess not. I'm still in, oh, Nancy, you know, you've done this before.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, what I would recommend is if you haven't yet learned that thinking, mental conditioning, and imagination are meaningless and are productive only of psychological distress, maybe start keeping a bit of a journal. When you find yourself getting all worked up, just write down what you are worked out about, and then go back a week later or a month later, whatever it takes, and write down whether it happened or not. Right? Just right. Keep track. Because what you're going to find out is that by far the vast majority of the time, whatever that mind is talking about does not happen. I can't say it'll never happen, but it's actually rare that it happens. Right? So if you start keeping track, start writing, oh, you know, I'm all worried that this is going to happen, this is going to happen. Then give it whatever amount of time, you know, needs to happen. And then look, did it happen? And then go back and write, no, didn't happen. And pretty soon, you'll realize that the mind doesn't know what it's talking about. And you'll quit believing it. You'll learn how to let go of it if you just practice that exercise. Was there anything else on this topic before we go on, George? I thought I saw a hand.
I'd like to point out that psychological distress can also occur when something is happening that you don't want to happen. I'll give you an example. I bought a house. My wife and I bought a house in 2007 in Chicago just before the market collapsed for real estate. And we were underwater basically from the get-go. And so we lived in it a few years, and then we rented it for a few years. And I thought I was at the point where I could sell it and break even. And I miscalculated. And I can't tell you the psychological distress I felt, because I had to put more money into this house than I'd already lost. I had to put another $7,000 into it to get rid of it. And it's like, once you get the ball rolling, you've got no choice. So, you know, I could have saved myself all of that aggravation and just said, well, hey, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and the question I want to ask you, George, is how many days since then have you not eaten? Yeah, you're muted. So.
Nary a one. And the reality is that $7,000 wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, you know? It wasn't, right.
It was because I sold two more houses. I made profits on both of those. You know, it's like, well, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
It's just the one that I lost money on.
Exactly. And that's why it says it was the thinking, the mental conditioning, and the imagination that caused the psychological distress, not the losing of the 7,000. The truth is, although none of us like losing 7,000, it didn't actually hurt George at all, right? It's just the thought of losing the 7,000, right? The thought of it. He's had a roof over his head. He eats well. He has a car to drive. He even got to go to Italy, right? So... Yeah, so remember that. Thinking, mental conditioning, and imagination are meaningless and are productive only of psychological distress. And like I said, what I recommend is paying attention and noticing that this is true, right? Maybe even keeping a journal. And that will help you to lose interest in all of this stuff the mind is saying that's getting you all worked up. If you lose 7,000, go ahead a year later, write down how many hungry days you had because of it, you know? To find out that it was really nothing, that it really didn't matter, right? It was just the thought of it. So let's see what else I had in here. Let's look at 183. The total abandonment of all notions or ideas is liberation, and such an abandonment is possible when the pursuit of pleasure is abandoned. I'll read that again. The total abandonment of all notions or ideas is liberation, and such an abandonment is possible when the pursuit of pleasure is abandoned. Now, lots of people get stuck on this pursuit of pleasure thing. It kind of makes it sound like you have to give up everything you love about life. You know, like there has to be this major sacrifice. I submit for consideration that the greatest pursuit of pleasure that everyone is involved in is paying attention to the mind, period. You know, even if you watch TV 4 hours a day, you probably watch the mind closer to 12 hours a day, meaning zeroed in on the mind in the same way you get zeroed in on TV. The mind is your primary form of entertainment. Total abandonment of all notions or ideas is liberation, and such an abandonment is possible when the pursuit of pleasure is abandoned. Again, I just want to submit for consideration that your greatest pursuit of pleasure is just listening to your own entertaining mind. And I think that's all I have to say about that. Doesn't mean you can't go hiking or whatever it is that you do. Doesn't mean you can't eat tasty food. Just stop being entertained by the mind. Bring your attention away from the mind. Bring your attention away from the mind. And then bring your attention away from the mind again. And it's funny, the pleasure that people get from the mind. Some people, I know some people that are extremely negative. I've never been that way. I've always been more of a happier personality. But I know people, like, they're kind of like Eeyore. You know, like every time they open their mouth, they're complaining, right? But you know what? Whether they admit it or not, they're totally entertained by that or they wouldn't do it. Right? Even that very negative mind, they're totally entertained by that. That feeling of victim, that feeling of being stepped on all the time, that feeling of nothing ever goes my way. Woe is me. Nobody loves me, you know? So, like I said, that's all I have to say about that. That's the pursuit of pleasure that I would ask you to watch. And go ahead and go hiking or bike riding or whatever the heck it is that you do. The ignorant engages himself in endless arguments. Well, I've heard some of you in your journals admit that you do, you know, argue with people, and I know that happens. You know, you might get into a political disagreement with a relative or a friend, and you guys are owning up to that when you do it, or at least some of you are. But I just want to point us in a little deeper about just the arguments that go on in our heads that never pass our lips. Right? Watch for those, because there's more of those than there are the ones that pass our lips. So watch for when you're arguing in your head with anyone or anything. Right? That's really where the endless arguments, I think, happen for most of us. I think most of us are not vocally arguing endlessly, but there may be an awful lot of mental arguing going on. Yes, Jay?
Do you have any tips on that? Because that's what I realized my biggest thing was from contemplating that, just asking.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what I did. First of all, I knew that I wanted to let go of this habit. That's what I saw it as a habit. And so when I would just catch myself doing it again, I would simply remind myself that I want to let go of this. I think the key word in that is want. You know, I think if you shame yourself, I don't think it works. Shame yourself for catching yourself arguing again. I don't think that approach works, or at least it wouldn't work for me. Realizing this is something I want. I want to let go of arguing, you know, all the time. Again, for me, it would be more internal as well. I was never an outward arguer much. I mean, everybody argues a little bit, but, you know, that wasn't a habit of mine. It was the internal. But just remind myself, I want to let go. And every time I caught myself reminding myself I want to let go, and then just stopping right in mid argument, right? You know, arguing with the TV is a big one. I mean, people argue with the news. People argue with sports, you know. And you're laughing, so I know you guys know how silly that is because you're laughing at yourselves right now. Yeah. So I just wanted to bring that back again because, you know, we read this stuff and some of this stuff seems so repetitive. I think that we can almost take it too lightly. And so I just kind of want to bring it back and make sure that we're paying attention for our mental arguments and realizing they're not helpful and we don't want them and dropping them. And eventually the habit will die. Again, whatever you don't give attention to dies, right? Let's see, the next thing I wanted to look at was number 188. At the end of the world cycle, all these objects of perception cease to be. The one self, which is consciousness alone, remains, and this is indescribable, being beyond thought and description. Only the sage of self-knowledge experiences this. Others merely read these words. One of the things I wanted to talk about, and this is actually came up in my teaching also on Sunday night, the guiding light. So if you haven't heard that and you want to go back and listen to that, you can. One of the things I wanted to talk about is the extent of the mind. It says, at the end of the world cycle, all these objects of perception cease to be. The one self, which is consciousness alone, remains. And this is indescribable, being beyond thought and description. What I talked about on Sunday night is something that is referred to as Buddhist hell. Sorry, Don, but it really is. It's referred to as Buddhist hell. And the Buddhist hell is when you meditate so much and you become so skilled at meditation, you become so deep at meditation that you come to this place in meditation where there's just this peace and there's no thought. And you sit there in this peace, observing this peace, right? And the Buddhists call that hell. And some people may wonder why that is called hell. And the reason it's called hell is because it's the last place where people get stuck before they awaken. Because they enjoy the perception, key word here is perception, of peace. And so, so what we want to do is we always want to pay attention when we're in meditation as to whether we are perceiving or not, right? Are you still in the realm of perception? And if you're still in the realm of perception, you want to continue self-inquiry. What sees this? So you want to go beyond even that perception of peace, right? The perception of peace is not the same thing as the self alone that remains, right? The self, which is consciousness alone, remains. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up again. And I talked about that a lot on Sunday night. So if you want to go and listen to that, but just be aware that peaceful meditation can be a trick. Right, gonna keep going back, looking for what sees this peace, this ocean of peace. And then 190. Oops, it's 7:31. Never mind, I'm done. I only have one more, but I don't always finish my list, so we'll stop there. So I don't always finish my list. I just collect stuff, and when it runs out, it runs out. I just wasn't watching the time. So thank you, everyone, and I will see you guys next week. Remember, your review will start on Monday.